don't take offense, guests, but we can just play that all morning long. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable. I hope you are well. I hope everything is going fine in the department of your life and that you are, you know, keeping things on the straight and narrow. We welcome you. We thank you. As always, great words from Ray and Sarah this morning. Anything you can do to help our lockbox, WAMC.org. We'll be hearing more pitches just through the show, and then Sarah and I will be back at 11:30 to talk more about the lockbox, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We are really overwhelmed by how beautiful you all have been in your giving so far, and we only hope we can keep it up and keep the pace, and who knows, maybe in a week and a half we won't even need to start a fund drive on Monday the 6th of October, but who am I kidding? We probably will. But either way, WAMC.org, WAMC.org, 800-323-9262, wonderful volunteers standing by, staff standing by, and we welcome you. Now, also standing by, we have a terrific group of panelists who are here. They are ready, they are willing, they are able, and they are they're all systems a go to talk about the issues of today. So we look forward to that.
Boy, Joe, if your nose isn't growing after that that opening, I don't know if it ever will be.
Just trying to sell the potatoes, Bob.
Yeah,
just,
I got you.
just trying to move the merchandise. We welcome
talk about overpromising.
Four incredible folks, and let me introduce them to you now. One you just heard of. It's Bob Bellafiore, communications expert, founder, president of Stanhope Partners. It seems like it's been a long time since I've seen you.
Well, you're correct. Your perceptions are accurate.
Okay, so I welcome you back,
yeah.
And it wasn't we didn't offend you or anything.
No.
Work release.
yeah. Some of us, what we call being away for a while.
That's the bracelet.
I hope you've noticed. I hope you've noticed the shiny new license plates coming out of DMV these days. I put extra care in those. Ignore the typos. There's no proofreading in prison.
Yeah. Well, regardless of where you were, I am glad you were here today.
I have been in D.C. For the last 2 months, participating in the blessed event of a grandchild.
Oh, great.
Wow.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yes. And so congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us about the grandson.
Daughter.
I apologize. Tell me about the granddaughter.
See, you can't get away from the patriarchy, even in WAMC.
Yeah.
Right? It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. And now you see. I thought he said grandson, but it was just my addled brain.
And
but
now you
ahead.
See what us progressives are up against.
Yes, I understand. I understand. So the granddaughter.
Yes, the granddaughter. Yes.
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 And how old now?
She's a month old now.
Oh, that's great.
A month old. Yeah.
And her name?
Philomena.
Lovely. Oh, wonderful.
Wow.
Oh, that is so exciting.
Philomena Bellafiore. It's almost like iambic pentameter.
Yeah, that is. that child needs a great signature.
Oh, well, by the time she's holding a pen,
that's
who knows if people will even be doing that.
Oh, you know, Grandpa, you know she's already holding a pen. Public policy and communications expert, certainly someone who has spent years and years in Washington on the Hill, working in the Senate with Senator Kennedy and many others. An incredible portfolio of jobs and positions within and outside of government, and it's always a pleasure to have her with us. Good morning, Teresa Bourgeois.
Good morning. Delighted to be here on the birthday of Bruce Springsteen.
Yes.
And Ray Charles. And trying to figure out if they ever sang together, so one of our listeners must know that. But also something that would be near and dear to your heart.
Yeah.
You know, National Day. Bob always tells us National Day. It's National Checkers Day, and this is for dogs in politics.
Oh.
And
for Nixon's dog.
And I love the little more dogs than presidents have lived in the White House, and so they celebrate.
Hmm. Do you know that it was on September 23rd, 1952, when the Checkers speech was made by Nixon?
Is that why it's Checkers
Hence
Day?
Hence National Checkers Day.
Okay. Yeah.
How about that? And I know your love of dogs.
Well, pull out that Checkers speech, read that over, and commemorate today. That's a good thing, a good project for all of us to do.
And maybe better to read is it's also the anniversary of the publication of The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, that is always worth a read and a reread.
Absolutely.
That's all I got for today. Sorry.
Well, that's all you have in that department. Wait, you got a lot more, I'm sure, but we'll get to that in a minute.
I got the dogs for you. I brought the dogs.
Robert Pondicio is here, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Good morning, Robert. How
are
you?
Good morning, Joe. I am well. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. So as we have Robert and Bob for the purposes of this conversation. We'll do it that way. Our dear friend Mike Spain is here, former Times Union Associate Editor, and we are very happy you are with us, as you usually are on Tuesdays, and I thank you very much for making this no exception.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Very happy to be here with you all.
All right. Let's go to the work at hand and talk about what's happening in the world. The president made the announcement yesterday, which has already been raising some alarms among doctors, but I want to know what the panel thinks of this. The Trump administration on Monday ventured into uncertain scientific territory, calling to limit the use of one medication under investigation for a possible connection to autism, while pushing to expand access to another being studied as a potential therapy, despite the lack of definitive evidence for either. Taking Tylenol is not good, President Donald Trump said during a briefing at the White House. I'll say it, it's not good. To which the folks at Tylenol must have been like, all right, we are the biggest name in selling this over-the-counter medication that is in generic form and can be purchased in a billion different brand names. But thank you for picking us. We appreciate it. U.S. health officials warn that acetaminophen, the active ingredient in Tylenol, and more than 600 other medications, Excedrin's like, oh, thank God, they say that they should be avoided in early pregnancy except in cases of high fever. A sharp pivot in public health guidance on a medication that many major medical associations, including the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, say is safe. The administration said the Food and Drug Administration would be updating the drug's labeling and that a letter would be sent to all physicians in the country. Trump also highlighted, and then I may get this wrong, Luciferin. Is that how we are pronouncing that all? Are we on the same page there? A drug used to treat the side effects of certain cancer medications as a potential autism treatment. Early trials involving small groups of children have shown encouraging gains in speech. The researchers emphasized the need for larger studies. The administration said the FDA would move to formally acknowledge the drug's potential use in autism treatment and asks states to monitor and study its use. The president called the moves historic, but the announcement was met with sharp criticism and concern from doctors, scientists, and autism advocates. Some expressed concerns that the warnings could prompt pregnant individuals to avoid Tylenol even when sick, or could push parents to try Luciferin without proper medical oversight and limited understanding of its effectiveness or long-term risks. But the fears run deeper than medical misuse. What alarms many in the scientific community is the politicized rush to present these drugs as solutions, bypassing the slow, careful work that research demands. They warn that drawing broad conclusions from incomplete evidence isn't just premature, but reckless, and it risks undermining the public trust that is the foundation of public health. Robert Pendicio.
Oh, man. Why me? I think I know why you chose me, because you know what I'm going to say. Because it seems like every time I'm on the roundtable, some variation on this theme comes up of public health and public trust. So I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. In other words, you know, and I can't even remember, Joe, what the last, you know, two or three times we discussed this issue.
Just for the record, two things. please know that I never have any memory of what anybody ever says earlier on the show.
Okay.
So don't use that as an excuse. But also,
Joe, that just makes you like all every listener.
Well, right. Like, I don't
except
know.
For the crabby ones in Robert's case.
I don't know what he said.
Yeah.
But yes, go on.
No,
we
have had several turns of this wheel, especially going back to COVID, of public health. Under a cloud because of perceptions, fair or unfair, of politicization. And I recall saying on the roundtable not that long ago, a price may be paid for this, and this may be the price. I don't want to beat the dead horse, but during COVID, we saw schools staying closed because of union pressures, playgrounds and churches being closed, but you could go out and protest because racism was a public health menace, on and on. So, you know, I don't want to sound cynical. I'm not a cynical person. But here we go. You know, can I trust the guidance? Is it political? Why are you telling me this? There is a crisis of public trust in institutions in general. It's not new. It didn't happen yesterday when Trump made this announcement. I don't see a way forward out of it.
So, Mike.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that the
wait, can you say that again?
I don't agree more, Robert.
That a lot.
You said a lot of things. There are plenty of things you couldn't agree more.
Yeah, right. No, but the this promotion of Leukovorin, I guess. I mean, first of all, if you're a parent or a relative or know somebody who is on the spectrum, autism spectrum, any hope you get for some treatment is a good hopeful thing. It obviously needs to go through testing and retesting and verification, and there's a whole process that we have long established for that. This ignored all that. It kind of brought some deja vu back to you. Do you remember
Ivermectin? Yes.
Yes, that was what Trump announced was, you know, that works pretty well against COVID. And it was, it was for to treat
horse
warming. Well, yeah, but even in humans, it was used for parasites sometimes. I mean, in fairness. But it was primarily a horse medicine. And it was never, ever determined to be helpful in fighting COVID when there were other solutions, one of which he benefited from when he came down with COVID. But it wasn't that. And when he stands there with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on one side and Dr. Mehmet Oz on the other side, that just fills me with confidence that this is sound advice. What it ends up doing, it messes up the whole who do you trust thing.
Right.
And do I trust my doctor? Do I trust the New York Health Department? Do I trust the Iowa Health Department? There's everybody's going to have an opinion on this. And if there is contradictory medical evidence of some drug or some issue, it should be brought up. It should be discussed. You know, Tylenol or acetaminophen generically does have some risks. I mean, overtaking Tylenol, if you take too much of it, can pose liver damage, perhaps.
Right.
And it is a serious issue.
Which is on the
That's
label.
That's been publicized. It's been, and people need to be very careful with it. But the connection to pregnant women and autism, I mean, I don't want to call it a fringe theory, but I can't think it is, you know.
One of the things that I want to read three paragraphs here and then go to Bob Bellafiore. Trump, throughout the event, repeatedly warned pregnant women to avoid taking Tylenol and to not give it to newborns, even as he seemed to concede that he was going further than medical advisors and scientists would support. He also said that the research wasn't robust enough to back up what he was saying because the government in the past had politicized what projects to fund. This is based on what I feel, he said in one instance. There's a rumor, and I don't know if it's so or not, that Cuba, they don't have Tylenol because they don't have the money for Tylenol, he said in another, and they have virtually no autism. Okay? So this sort of gets into the point of the, not to use your term, Mike, fringe, but certainly not something that's coming out where I have a sheaf of papers that say a scientific study has proven that this is the case. Bob.
Wow, so much to unpack here. When you were reading from the story, Joe, and talking about something with a lack of definitive evidence and a politicized rush that undermines public trust, I thought we were talking about COVID vaccines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that was exactly the case with COVID vaccines. And back then, everybody cheered, right? It was an amazing scientific accomplishment that the massive multi-billion dollar pharmaceutical industry cranked out a vaccine, right?
Well, Project Warp Speed.
Whatever you want to call it, whatever the marketers called it, doesn't matter.
That's what Trump called it, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatever, yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I think that's what Trump
called it. It doesn't matter what it was called. The point is, what that story is talking about is exactly what happened with COVID, right? Two, I just want to say, go ahead.
I mean, exactly what happened with COVID, I understand your point. However, there is the difference between a pandemic and something that is killing individuals at that moment and is spreading, as compared to a medication that has been used for decades and decades with women, and there is still inconclusive evidence as to whether it does or does not cause autism.
Right.
And it's important to remember that a high fever for a woman, especially in early pregnancy, can be extremely dangerous to her baby.
They said, don't take it unless you have a high fever.
Right.
Go ahead.
So I'll say a second thing. In the second part that you read, it seems like Trump fully disclosed he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yes.
He fully disclosed. Three, I can't think of a single pregnant woman in America who takes medical advice from the president.
Thank God.
Right? They talk to their doctors. They talk to the people they trust. Right? And who you trust to get medical advice from is a really big question, because the medical industry, right, pushes things on people that are in the medical industry's interest and not always in the patient's interest. Tests, medications, all these kinds of things to simply treat symptoms and not cure. The medical industry in America treats symptoms, does not focus on cures.
Mm.
Right? And anybody who's gone through these endless treatments and attempts at medication, right, have seen that. And if you look skeptically at the medical industry, which, you know, I give Kennedy credit for, he is skeptical about it, right? He may be a quack, but that doesn't mean he's always wrong. It's worth asking the question. The other term here, and you hear this all the time, is settled science, which goes right up there with military intelligence. Yeah. It is inherently contradictory, because science is what we think we know so far.
Right.
And right, for a while there was settled science that the Earth was the center of the solar system. Right? There's all kinds of settled science, right, that it becomes unsettled as further things are known. So I am glad that they're asking the questions. We can sit here and talk about how Trump's style is over the top. Let me know if that's news to anybody. If he sits there and talks about things he doesn't know anything about, let me know if that's news to anybody. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, let's see what happens.
But if doctors and patients are hesitant now to take Tylenol, if it is safe, that is changing. I understand your point of it's up to the patient and the doctor, but if the information if the information being put out there is that this isn't the greatest thing, we have no great scientific background to say. And in fact, you have all these organizations, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the Food and Drug Administration, saying that it is safe. And then you have three people behind a dais saying that it's not safe. So does it then have the patient, have the doctor say, all right, well, let's look at other things.
Well, and how many painkillers are out there? I mean, you go to the CVS or the Walgreens and you look for something for your headache, and it's like, I got a headache just figuring out how to deal with my headache.
And Joe, you just described or listed a litany of ostensible experts and authorities whom we are supposed to trust for our public health advice.
Yeah.
My question is, do we still trust them? And if we don't, whose fault is that?
Well, if
there's it's not news to say there's a crisis of trust in institutions in general, but nowhere is this more acute than in public health.
Okay, so let me pause. We'll take a break. We'll go to a few messages. When we come back, I want to hear from Teresa on this, and then we'll get into it, as it were. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC. I'm doubting there will be any, but in case there are, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be back right after this.
Well, here it's fine. If you got the time.
I was talking about how great that music is, and I don't know if I ever mentioned that it's ZZ Top, and ZZ Top is playing the Palace Theater tomorrow night. You still have time to get tickets. It's tomorrow night, the 24th, Palace Theater in Albany, a beautiful, beautiful venue if you've never been there. PalaceAlbany.org, PalaceAlbany.org, ZZ Top in town, and they will be providing our music this morning. We are talking about the Trump administration tying Tylenol to autism, raising alarms in the community among many physicians. Teresa Bourgeois.
So I want to take a little bit of a different angle on this, which is how administration, you know, how White House uses its time, uses its bully pulpit, its focus really matters. Well, you know, any elected official, but particularly, most importantly, the White House. And I think that this Trump autism announcement, or whatever one calls it, you know, there's disproven, unproven scientific claims, you know, as he alluded to himself, you know, it's what he thinks may not be true. I think it's a really dangerous distraction from the healthcare debate that there's an urgency that Congress and the country should be having right now as we are a week out from the deadline for the budget bill. And clearly the Trump-Vance vote, the administration, they have cut millions of dollars in NIH and CDC funding, frozen more than $15 billion in biomedical research, stopped in its tracks, cancer research for children, and so on and so forth, a long litany of funding, including working to dismantle key university-based health research across the country. And where we're going to go from here is an important question that's partially needs to be settled or not settled with resolving the budget that's due October 1st, and also a core debate of that between the Democrats and the Republicans, such as the Democrats can get the Republicans to negotiate, is what happens with the Affordable Care Act. You know, they're trying to, so-called Obamacare care, they're trying to, you know, kill it without 1,000 budget cuts and changes and such. And so I think that if you want to focus on public health and on health care, what we really need right now is a much broader discussion on what the role of the federal government is in public health programs and public health research, and what happens when you drive out expertise among public servants in public health and such. And they... because where we're going with the path that they are on is the weakening or dismantling or closing of local community health centers, of rural and urban hospitals, and so on and so forth. And so there's some choices, really important choices, that need to be made in the next 7 days. And I think that that should be the focus, and I fear that this is a distraction to that. And separate from, I mean, I think you all have laid out the issues on the topic itself. And yes, there's always need for more research, but I think we have a much broader problem about health research that's going on right now that has a deadline that needs attention, and this is a distraction from that that I find deeply, deeply troubling.
We have a bunch of letters, and I want to get to a few of them before we go over to a break at the top of the hour, which is in just about 2 or 3 minutes. One thing, we did get a couple of letters, and I wanted to make mention, we were talking about the different things of today. One thing we didn't mention is that it is Rosh Hashanah and the Jewish New Year, so we certainly commemorate that and wish a very happy New Year. So make that up. And also, let's go to Jan, who says, this conversation is driving me mad. Acetaminophen is primarily a fever reducer. Anyone with a child knows this. Your guess states that all those other meds can be substituted. They can't. Further, who takes medical advice from Trump? Well, I believe Bob made that point. All those folks who dose themselves with ivermectin and other dubious meds to treat COVID. That from Jan.
Can I add some?
Yes, you can.
But, Bob, Trump gave Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, a leadership position and a microphone. And so they may not take advice from him, but Trump's administration is dismantling expertise. They are cutting out funding. There's a lot of concern in the country, I think, around and confusion around healthcare, and it has impacts across the United States and around the world. And so I think that this is a serious issue. There's one thing I strongly agree with you on, which is the advertising issue. I think pharmaceutical advertising is a serious problem, and both Democrats and Republicans have said that they're going to address it, and they haven't, because big pharma is so important. So I firmly agree with you on the pharmacy, if I understood you correctly, to be concerned about the abundance of pharmaceutical advertising. Is that what you were saying?
Well, I would say that the entire medical industrial complex has a commercial interest in people taking lots of drugs.
I agree.
And that includes the guys in the white coats and the women in the white coats and the stethoscopes and everybody who works in the healthcare system, because they all use it to draw down federal money for Medicaid, right? So it's all about money. It's money for the pharmaceutical companies. It's money for the healthcare system. It's money for the unions whose members are employed in the healthcare system. This is the thing. A patient is an ATM for the healthcare system.
Okay. A lot of that I disagree with you. I thought you were talking about concerns about ads on TV, which drive.
I wasn't localizing it to ads on TV. I'm talking about the entire medical industrial complex that sees every patient as a cash machine.
Well, I don't agree with you there.
But again, we have to look at the larger crisis in public health and confidence in it, which did not start yesterday afternoon with this announcement.
Well, it started with things like Clorox, you know.
No. I'm going to go back to COVID because I work in education, and we have witnessed, 25 years of academic gains being vaporized by keeping schools closed for a full school year and part of three. And who drove that public guidance, that public health guidance? Randy Weingarten in the teachers' union.
Can I ask you a question about
sure.
that? So there was a lot of angst about keeping the schools open, closed, open schools. But one of the fundamental problems were the kids could go back, but what if you didn't have bus drivers, which they didn't have? What if you didn't have school lunch people? What if you didn't have janitors? What if you didn't have the teachers, because a lot of those were older? That everybody said go back to school, but how could you do that
without
the personnel?
That's not what was driving the CDC's guidance at the time.
I've heard this from you a couple times, and I think that there's a lot
of disparity.
It has
the virtue of being provable.
And I do think that the Trump administration did drive a lot of confusion and concern about the public health system.
Look, I want to be clear. I'm not defending in any way, shape, or form what came out of the president or Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s mouth yesterday. I'm merely saying we are paying the price
for a
generation of public health politicization. And look, even more broadly, scientific politicization.
Would you keep blaming the unions for closing
no,
schools and
I,
keeping them closed? And I'm saying that it was, yeah, you got letters.
I got to take a break.
Me too.
All right. Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page. We're going to take a break. We'll go over to, get a few messages, and then we're going to go over to Lockbox Central, And then we will return and we'll continue our conversation. Don't worry. We have a lot of letters. And we'll get to those and much, much more after this short break.
I spied a little thing and I followed her all night in a funky fine Levi's and her sweater's kind of tight. She had a West Coast strut that was sweet as molasses.
ZZ Top on this Tuesday morning, the 23rd of September. It's 9 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we thank you for being with us. It is we have a panel going on. We are talking about the Trump administration talking yesterday, tying Tylenol, acetaminophen, actually, but he kept in the releases using Tylenol. We have a letter on that. I'll get to that in a second. And the medical community ringing alarm bells as a result of that. We have a lot of letters, so if you'll permit me, I will go through these, and probably at a pretty good clip. Although, if any one of our four terrific panelists wants to jump in, please do so. I begin with Ray. The question you need to be asking is, what grudge does Trump have against Johnson & Johnson? And what is he trying to sell us? As expected, their stock value took a hit yesterday, and I'm sure he knew it would. And yes, some people will listen to whatever bad information they get from that guy. Yes.
Wasn't Woody Johnson Trump's first term ambassador to England? Woody Johnson of Johnson & Johnson, and also pathetic owner of the New York Jets, my football.
More importantly, is
a Trump guy.
I have no idea what the relationships are there. Mark says, I have been working with children and adults on the spectrum since 1979. The definition of autism has been evolving since the 80s. In 2013, the DSM-V updated the definition of, is that V or 5? Do we know that? I apologize. But anyway, updated the information to include several previously separate diagnoses into one spectrum. This resulted in a 300% increase of autism diagnoses. If there were any competent people in the current administration's cabinet, perhaps some with medical backgrounds, they would have read the scientific literature and understood it. That from Mark. We go to Mike. Note, Cuba does have autism at lower rates due to a lack of diagnoses, and acetaminophen is only available by prescription. Contrary to another assertion that was made yesterday, autism exists in Amish communities at about the same rates as the general population. And did anyone see the head of the FDA say it's difficult to look at a child with autism? Really? ! That is for Mike.
He was working that keyboard.
Yes. Then we go to Brendan. Please tell your panelist, Bob, to stop equivocating with the COVID vaccine. It is not relevant for the discussion about autism. Also, the mRNA technology used in the COVID vaccine had already existed for at least a decade and proven safe. And I'll leave it at there.
He's missing the point.
Okay.
The point is trust. In the federal health authorities and institutions, as Robert had said.
And proof, right, to your very good point previously, a lot of what is proven today is disproven by future studies.
Sure, absolutely.
But as some experts have been saying in the last 24 hours or for a while about some of this stuff, is that they are not taking the time that it requires to do. They can do additional research, but it takes time, and they are announcing outcomes before they are. They're announcing more funding for research and outcomes at the same time.
What would we do without experts?
Let's see. Ruth says, as a panel of two adult and nearly adult children with autism, I'd like to propose that perhaps instead of trying to cure neurodivergent individuals, maybe we should work on making the world easier for them. Stop trying to fix autism, and let's fix our perception of how we view their world instead. neurodivergent people are amazing and wonderful, and we can learn a lot from them.
Okay. I am with her.
Great letter.
Having worked for years with people in the IDD sector.
Can I?
Totally with her.
Peter Thiel, who is very close to Trump, has written and spoken about this, about the range of people, neurodiversity, and the benefits, the sort of the talents that he sees that we should tap in them, many of those folks, rather than, there's some positive aspects that we should be paying attention to.
We then go to this letter from Deborah. RFK Jr. is now part of the government conspiracy he railed against. He does not know. Take two. He does know better. The Trump EPA continues to roll back environmental health protections that impact pregnant women and children, adding this additional burden to pregnant women to please an egomaniac desiring a quote-unquote win is unconscionable. Let's see. We go to Melissa said, I had twins. I took Tylenol when pregnant. One has autism and one does not. Same pregnancy, obviously. Parents of children with autism already have enough to deal with. Worry, fear for the future, caring for their kids, coping with all the struggles that come with the diagnosis. The last thing they need is unresearched pseudoscience from these quacks, causing some more nonsense to be spread. That from Melissa. We go to Doris. People living with autism are not ill or broken. They do not need to be, nor can they be, quote, cured. We need to learn to see their gifts and make room in the world for who they are as they were given to us. Then we check in Matthew. For the record, buildings were closed during the pandemic because the disease spreads in the air, and enclosed air was far more dangerous than any outside activity. And as that understanding involved, outside activities were more permissible, while indoor group congregations were still highly risky. That from Matthew. Then we go to David. First formal case of autism, 1943. Acetaminophen first available to the public, mid-1950s. Any correlation between the two is specious at best and blatant blather at worst. I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I just like saying blatant blather.
Five times fast?
Yeah, I want to try. I'm not going to do it on the air, but I want to try. Yeah, on the
you'll
way
be,
home.
You'll be with bait and bather before you know it.
We've lowered the bar so far in the fact department here that it's highly unlikely that a single cell amoeba of truth can slide underneath. Let's see. I want to, that's another letter about a different subject. Didn't we see this movie when Trump pumped using horse medicine and drinking bleach to fight COVID? Oy vey. It feels like deja vu all over again. See, I think it's very different, but okay. How much have federal officials and Trump invested in the new medicine that he is promoting? Then here you go. Bruce Springsteen and Ray Charles did perform together as part of the recording of We Are the World.
1985.
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anything the panel would like to add to the conversation before we close the book on this and move on?
One very important point. None of us are scientists here.
That is an important point.
But the White House did succeed in distracting us from the issue of the day, which is the budget.
The difficult part of this, too, is, though, that, you know, RFK Jr. and his regime have brought up some what I think would be very legitimate issues. Let's say, you know, artificial food coloring. It can't be good for you. And but all the anything he does now that is even proper and health positive will be thrown into the same category as all the negatives that he's done, and it just erases any value of anything he says.
Mike, only by people who can't think about two contrary ideas in their head at the same time.
No, but his credibility is compromised.
Yeah, but you take it on a case by case basis. It's like saying
that means you're going to think of things thoughtfully, and you're going to analyze, and you're going to go to other sources. A lot of people don't do that, Bob.
Well, that's a problem with the country.
Trump
is a wacko on one thing doesn't mean he's a wacko on everything. And it's the same thing with RFK. Just like every other cabinet secretary I can think of, they're not all, you know, Caesar's wife on everything. Nobody bats 1,000. So, you know, like for instance, here, let's look at some letters. I thought Nixon was a really good president on foreign policy. He had a lot of problems. He's a complicated guy. Everybody in these positions is a complicated person. Nobody bats 1,000. Some of the things they say are off the wall. Some of the things they say make a lot of sense.
If we say
Juan Soto struck out with the bases loaded in the ninth inning, therefore I never trust him with the bases loaded in the ninth inning, then that's narrow thinking.
But there's, again, I'm just fixated on this. There's a much bigger issue around public health, children's health, life expectancy, all of this going on, which is their dismantling of core research that was underway in universities and within the NIH and its various departments. They are dismantling all of that. And, you know, important research for kids and cancer, cardiac research, all of that, dismantling it. And the Republicans in the House and Senate, they could have slowed this down. They didn't. They've allowed it to happen, usurping their own authority. I mean, we have a really serious problem in public health and in health research in this country right now that goes way, way, way beyond these particular, you know, research on autism that needs to be addressed. And he throws his chum in the water and it distracts everybody. We need to be talking about the bigger issue. What are we going to do with all of these people who are going to be off their health insurance? What are we going to do with the people who premiums are skyrocketing and they're not going to be able to afford it, so they're going to leave? You know, in Virginia,
skyrocketing premiums is certainly a recent issue, isn't it?
In Virginia, well, it got contained and now it's going to go crazy again. And
it hasn't been contained in my healthcare system.
So in Virginia, they just announced yesterday three rural health centers are closing, leaving no, you know, access to health care in those regions. We have really complex concerns. We don't, you know, the funding for training to have the next generation of doctors and nurses and health expertise is being dismantled. What are we going to do? That we have a problem in our healthcare system right now. It's been complicated and hard for a long time, made much more so in the last couple of months. That's the bigger issue, I think.
All right, let's go to a new topic, and let's see. So we've only have about 9 minutes before we have a break, so I'll do something that we can knock out pretty quick, I believe, and that is the fact we talked a lot about Jimmy Kimmel's show being taken off the airwaves last week. The network announced yesterday that Jimmy Kimmel's show will return to television, to those ABC stations that wish to broadcast it, will come back tonight. ABC said on Monday that Jimmy Kimmel Live would return to its airwaves Tuesday, ending an impasse that began last week. Their comment from the Walt Disney Company, which owns ABC: last Wednesday, we made the decision to suspend production on the show to avoid further inflaming a tense situation and an emotional moment for our country. It is a decision we made because we felt some of the comments were ill-timed and thus insensitive. We have spent the last days having thoughtful conversations with Jimmy, and after those conversations, we reached the decision to return the show on Tuesday. Disney did not say whether all ABC affiliates, would carry Tuesday's show. At least one television group that owns some ABC affiliates said on Monday evening that it would not broadcast it, but we will see as we get closer to airtime and as the week progresses. ABC had removed Mr. Kimmel indefinitely last week after a top Trump regulator and many conservatives said he inaccurately described the politics of the man accused of fatally shooting the right-wing activist Charlie Kirk. Kirk, excuse me, Charlie Kirk. The subsequent suspension of Jimmy Kimmel Live almost immediately morphed into a flashpoint for free speech in the United States of America. Mike Spain.
I think it'll be interesting to see what Jimmy Kimmel says when he comes on for his monologue tonight and whether he's conciliatory. I think he probably will be in some way for having said things that offended people. And that's probably the end of it, and he'll probably tone it down a while, and then it will probably go back to the way it was. But the interesting thing for the Capital Region is Channel WTEN, based in Albany, is owned by Nexstar Media Group, and they have yet to say whether they'll resume broadcasting it. They had said they were going to pull it in the aftermath of his comments following Charlie Kirk's murder. And the other, people in the Hudson Valley, lower Hudson Valley, as you go down, some of those people can get ABC out of New York, so they'll be able to see it. And, of course, as Bob Bellafiore pointed out a few minutes ago, everyone can see it the next day on TikTok or on YouTube or anything. So
The entire episodes at Hulu.
Right. Or the entire episode on Hulu, right. but it sort of becomes a distraction, but it was a very interesting immediate reaction that probably played into Disney's decision. But in the end, it's all about big media companies. Nexstar wants to buy a smaller media group, and they're waiting for FCC approval. You know, Disney wants to buy the NFL Network. They're waiting for approval from the Trump administration, and the Trump administration can wield its power by holding up those billion-dollar mergers that make a lot of people rich, not anybody in this room. And it just shows this is all about money. I stand strongly for free speech, and it offends the bejesus out of me that the federal government would just be offended, you know, just use its power to drill down on Jimmy Kimmel because President Trump said Jimmy Kimmel is next after Stephen Colbert was canceled. You know, I mean, it's a terrible distraction from bigger things. I think you're right, Teresa, the budget. You know, I think that U.S. attorneys being told to go after Trump's enemies outright. You know, those are serious, serious problems. This is serious, but in the scheme of things, this looks like a storm that's going to blow by, and other things are going to come up, and that's all I have to say.
What was that Oscar Wilde line? I think it was Oscar Wilde about the cynic is the man who knows the price of everything but the value of nothing. I hope we don't view everything through the lens of money. I'm a capitalist. You know, I like money as much as the next person. But look, I got to be honest. I was still just gobsmacked by what he said. It's funny, even before he was taken off the air, I saw that clip of him saying that the MAGA gang, I think was his phrase, killed Charlie Kirk. And I literally retweeted
No, he did not say that.
He did not say that.
He did not say
he
that.
He did not
what,
say
what
that.
Was his exact words? Tell me.
Well, I will find them.
Okay.
He did not say that.
Let me continue with the point, yeah. which is I retweeted and I wrote, how is this possible? In other words, how is it possible? Because this was not a spontaneous remark. This was a monologue. This was something that was scripted, that producers read, that writers wrote, etc.
That ABC approved.
Fine. How is it possible that so many people could feel comfortable saying what he said? It just kind of strained my credulity. I'm not sure. And look, you know, if you want to talk about the government role, obviously the FCC and the government has no role in policing speech. But I thought what he said was just so egregious, and it depressed me, honestly, because I thought, how thick are our bubbles that you can be, the most benign explanation is he was unaware of what Governor Cox in Utah said. He was unaware of what the Wall Street Journal said about the motivation.
He had put out a tweet the moments after it happened with sending love and understanding to the family. Right. I don't think that is what... That was at issue here.
Okay.
No. The issue was, and this is, I'm just reading from the BBC, in his monologue on Monday, Kimmel said that the, quote, MAGA gang, close quote, was desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them.
I mean,
that's factually incorrect. What you said is exactly what he said, Bob, but I think he made a factually incorrect assertion.
But that doesn't say
But
that
a politically
he was,
charged.
Well, and it wasn't just that it offended people. Yeah. He
but
was
that's
flat
not
out
what
wrong.
Robert said.
He was wrong. Yeah, he made a mistake. I mean, I think what he said was...
But it was a malicious mistake.
Yeah.
If you look at his history, it's a malicious mistake.
I think that's right.
I don't think it's counter to all the information that people have. Yeah.
But
all right.
Freedom of speech isn't about me agreeing or liking what he
just
says.
No, of course not. Now, I just want to ask somebody about the outrage meter.
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you were outraged when the IRS audited conservative 501c3s.
Right.
Raise your hand if you were outraged when Facebook and Twitter banned the New York Post...
Yeah.
From running stories about Hunter's laptop.
Remember the
raise your hand if you were this outraged when they did the same thing to a guy running for president.
Yeah,
and the nominee of a major
party. Misinformations are that.
All right. So let's.
So let's level out the outrage here.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest about what they said.
All right. Stop. We have to take a break.
Okay, Dad.
We're really late for a break, and we'll be back. We'll continue after this. And hit me like a ton of lead. If I blow my top, will you let it go to your head? Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We thank you for being with us. We thank you for supporting the Lockbox, which you can continue to do, wamc.org, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. We have about 10 minutes left in our time together. Officially, who have we heard from? We heard from Mike and Bob, is that right?
On Kimmel? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, okay.
I've said my piece.
Go, Teresa.
So I, again, bigger picture here, want to look at a bigger picture here, which is, and I looked at a Washington Post profile of FCC Chairman Brendan Carr, when he was nominated by President-elect Trump, he heralded Carr as a quote-unquote warrior for peace. The more I learn about him, seems to be what I would consider a foot soldier for Project 2025, which, I mean, they said what they were going to do. It's all there. They lined it up. That's fair game, but it's all out there. I think that there seems to be this effort for a larger realignment in our communications channels, communications networks, and they're being fairly aggressive about that, and he's a main player in that. Just a part of the summary that was in this profile, this Washington Post profile, and I'm quoting from it. Since taking over the chairmanship, Carr has criticized nearly every major media company. He launched a still ongoing investigation of NPR and PBS over sponsorship practices, demanded answers from YouTube parent Alphabet over allegations that it discriminated against faith-based programming, threatened to block mergers of companies engaged in DEI practices, and approved the Skydance $8 billion merger with Paramount with an ombudsman who has been a Trump donor installed at CBS News as a concession. In the Carr suggested his mandate came straight from Trump, who he said ran directly against the quote-unquote legacy media establishment and smashing the facade that they get to control what we say, what we think, the narrative around events. And he talks about how, quote, NPR has been defunded. And he cataloged his victories under Trump. He says, quote, PBS has been defunded. Colbert is retiring. Joy Reid is out at MSNBC. Terry Moran is gone from ABC and is now admitting that they are biased. CBS has now made some commitments to us that they are going to return to more fact-based journalism, close quote. I think the bigger issue is all of these reorganizations and consolidations and who's really in control of them, of these platforms, not just local news, but all sorts of communications platforms. And if you take this in conjunction with the announcement that we saw, you know, who owns Twitter and who now apparently who's going to take over control of TikTok, it appears that it's going to be Larry Ellison from Oracle and along with some funding from the Silver Lake, and the head of Silver Lake is also a friend of Musk's and on the board of Twitter. And there's just a lot of concentration of communications channels that's moving into one direction. I thought it was interesting that Carr yesterday was at a summit talking, and he was espousing that his real focus is the public interest standard and trying to empower local TV stations to serve the interest of the local community. But the problem is that those local TV stations are not owned locally. They're owned by what's now going to become, if a new consolidation goes through, a far, far fewer and fewer number of corporations that dictate what they do. And we see that in the decision tonight about whether or not Sinclair or Nexstar will air it. So I think there's a broader issue here, well beyond Kimmel, of concentration of ownership of communications channels that we need to be paying attention to.
I'm going to see your broad issue and raise you one. There's a broader issue still, which is the politicization of media. If you don't like when the government tries to impose its will, whether it's Trump imposing his will on Colbert and Kimmel, whether it's the Biden administration playing the games with the misinformation czar, et cetera, if that kind of thing sets your teeth on edge, I propose we abolish the FCC.
Well, I don't. I think the FCC should work as a regulatory authority, not as a...
That's what it's trying to do.
Now, it's kludge.
You want to call it censorship if you like. It has the statutory authority to do this. I don't think it should have that.
What do they call it? Jawboning, I think, is the phrase that the experts
that's
use.
Right. But the FCC was created when? In the 1930s, Bob? I mean, it's a long time ago when bandwidth or spectrum, you know, AM, FM, there wasn't FM, AM and television spectrum was limited. We had three networks, et cetera. Now we have functionally limitless bandwidth between, cable, satellite, streaming, et cetera. The FCC is a relic. If you don't like the politicization of broadcasting, get the government out of the business, take away its authority to do it at all.
I don't agree with that, but I do think that the Carr is using his regulatory authority, going well beyond that. He's using it as a threat to drive other changes that the Trump administration, personnel changes that the Trump administration wants, or using his regulatory authority or other regulatory arms of the Trump administration to, they're forcing the hiring of certain people that the leadership of CBS News.
But the litmus
test, that the role of the FCC?
The litmus test cannot be it's doing something I don't like.
They're trying to foxify CBS News.
Okay, but the litmus test cannot be it's doing something I don't like. The litmus test has to be the permission structure to do it at all.
But is it the government's role to step in and try to
foxify
CBS News?
But this is what I used to say to my civic students back in the day. I always would say, imagine this power in the hands of your worst enemy. And right now for you it is. And
no,
4 years from now,
they're not my worst enemy. I think we just need to wake up to what's happening.
I agree with you. I just don't agree what the ramifications of that agreement are. You're saying you don't like this particular enforcement mechanism. I'm saying I don't like it, period. I don't want anybody to have this authority. We have a First Amendment for a reason.
But
he doesn't really
have the authority. He's using his regulatory authority because they want to do these mergers, and these mergers go beyond the rules of the FCC. So they're going to have to change the FCC rules to allow what's the next big merger between Nexstar and Tegna, right? That's the next one that they want to do, which will consolidate ownership of local TV stations more completely, well beyond the 32% rule and 38% rule, whatever it is. It's going to be about 80% of concentrated ownership. So they're going to have to change the rules. He's using that regulatory authority to force changes in personnel, changes in other areas, way beyond the role of what the government should be. And I would say that if it was trying to, MSNBC. I think we have a problem that Fox and NBC are so far apart. The country is listening to two separate conversations. That's not good for the country.
They're listening to one of them, I assure you. One or the other.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I didn't say it right. Thank you. That's a good correction. What I'm saying is people are divided in terms of their information streams.
And the problem is this. I'm holding up my phone. Once people stopped turning pages of a newspaper and started curating their own news, the national pastime went from baseball to confirmation bias.
You're here.
All people want to hear is stuff that confirms their preconceived notions and their feelings and affirms them in the rightness of their opinion.
But the more that we concentrate that, the worse that it's going to get. I firmly agree with you, Bob. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And if you read books like The Anxious Generation, right, this directly tracks to the advent of the smartphone, right? And this goes to TikTok and Facebook and everything else. We have given the algorithm access to our innermost thinking and knows what we want before we want it. And we encourage that and we feed that through our activity on our phones. And right. And the FCC is not going to change that. American culture is going to change that. You know what's going to change that? Studies in the humanities are going to change that. Reading old dusty books is going to change that. Oh. And I fear that the horse is out of the barn on social media because it is biologically rewiring people's brains for dopamine hits.
I absolutely, firmly, totally agree with you.
And whatever the FCC is doing with the networks and government using its power as a cudgel, guess what? That ain't new, right? We did that in the Pataki administration, I heard.
Well, I was there. I witnessed it from the other side. The problem is, without us paying attention, all of these information streams, not just the local televisions, Twitter, TikTok, UFC, they're all being concentrated under the ownership of a very, very small number of people.
The FCC has nothing to say about Twitter and TikTok and whatnot. They're not broadcasting.
No, what I'm saying is that these things are happening now. A range of things are happening right now.
So what do we make of the TikTok merger?
Which is, I think, very concerning. I think it's very...
Joe desperately trying to change the subject.
Well, no.
I think it's all a
same.
Piece of a larger thing.
I mean, so TikTok is licensing the algorithm.
Yeah.
And
maybe, yeah.
Right. And that is, according to officials in the White House, the software giant Oracle will oversee the security of Americans' data and monitor changes and updates to TikTok's powerful recommendation technology under a deal to avert a ban of the service, according to a senior White House official.
But Silver Lake is going to own a part of it, and Murdoch is going to own a part of it,
yeah,
too.
But you can't control what's on TikTok. TikTok is user-generated. Look, I have a very parochial concern about TikTok. I was in favor of the ban. I was hoping it would go away just because of the deleterious effects it's having on kids.
And what about the China problem that everybody was afraid of before?
Well, this deal is supposedly going to ameliorate
but
that.
Will but will it? They say maybe not. Yeah. And the same thing, like the concern about the China getting our chips, our computer chips, right? And then now there's a deal with the UAE that the Trump family is involved with that's giving away our computer chips. So all this concern about China. But Bob, this speaks to what Bob was talking about, which is the power of these algorithms, right? Yeah. It's the power of these algorithms, right, Bob?
It's more than the power of the algorithms.
And who owns the information?
Every individual in America who's on this thing has volunteered access to their thought processes.
Yeah. And all their information.
Who are selling it.
Right. We are the product. We are not the consumer. We're the product.
We have voluntarily done it. They can't do anything if we don't do it. We have voluntarily done it. And they have.
But I think it's beyond when we're looking
back.
It's not
the bad business guy. It's us. Mm. The problem is us.
But I don't think people realize they're the product. They're beginning to more and more so, or how harmful it all is.
What's the oldest truth in newspapering, Mike? The reader thinks they're the customer.
And they're the product.
And they're the product. So this isn't new. People have been.
But it's more dangerous, though.
Since Benjamin Franklin.
A lot of older rules of news.
Right? Right. But that's the
most
counterintuitive.
And we didn't get to talk about the UN.
No. Oh, we didn't get to talk about a lot of stuff.
But that's talking about the UN would be great on Rosh Hashanah, I think, given what's going on.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Put a fork in us. We're done.
Check, please.
Hell, I've been done about 25 minutes ago.
Sorry, everybody.
We are out of time. And my thanks to everybody. And we will return. We're going to talk about the Berkshire Wit Festival coming up. Bernard Schwartz will be with us. We'll have that conversation after this short break.